This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of May 3rd, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 132. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. The Big Deal feature, looking back at four items from the last week of the fourth month of 2020. Plus, I will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those making a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or are you also concerned that the Chinese government is using the pandemic and the related PPE shortage to gain political influence in Canada? If you've been reading the Breaker.News recently, you've seen the stories and you've seen the videos about the Chinese consulate and its United Front allies working first to export bulk medical supplies from Canada to China in January and February, and then, in March and April, donate lesser quantities of PPE to BC hospitals. There was a photo op in late April at the Chinese consulate in Vancouver where Xi Jinping's envoys invited the top bureaucrat in BC's $2 billion a year medical supply department. Was the $117,000 donation of goods a strategy to sell even more down the road? You must know that the job of a foreign diplomat is also to develop the economy in their home country. The Canadian Alliance of Chinese Associations, which supports the Chinese communist regime of Xi Jinping, was a driving force in both campaigns. Vice Consul Wang Chen-jun was seen in a warehouse helping mainland China expats get their hands on as many masks, gloves, goggles, and gowns as possible. Public officials at various levels of government turned a blind eye earlier this year. Were they afraid they might offend donors or voters from a powerful ethnic lobby group? I found proof via Freedom of Information that the BC Premier's office knew on February 19th that Canadian supplies were running low. That was 12 days after the World Health Organization sounded the alarm about high prices and scarcity. But that didn't stop the Trudeau Liberals from sending 16 tons to China in early February. In the meantime, the federal government has spent at least $300 million on emergency shipments of PPE from China. So what did Prime Minister Justin Trudeau know, and when did he know it? Like he sometimes does, he found himself in a question he didn't want to answer. Listen.
Were you or anyone in your government aware back in January that China had engaged in a global effort to procure PPEs and have those sent back to China? And if you or anyone in your government knew about this, why didn't you try and stop it?
As of January 2nd, our chief public health officer convened a group of provincial public health officers to advise that there were reports of a new virus present in China. Our intelligence services were tracking and aware of the issues, and we got regular updates through the month of January. Further than that, I don't have anything to add.
What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
You gotta do what? What? Dr. Henry said, we're gonna have to wait to vaccinate. So just stay strong and sing this song. You gotta wash your hands. Don't touch your face.
John Mitchell and his Vancouver independent single, Do What? Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. Kyoto in the Japan Times. Japan's medical workers facing worsening shortages of protective gear, survey says. In a study conducted between April 6th and 21st on 522 medical doctors nationwide, 78% said there was a shortage, or somewhat of a shortage, of necessary medical protective gear, up from 61% in the previous poll in March, according to medical information provider KKE Healthcare. 75% of respondents wanted more surgical masks, followed by 71% looking for N95 masks. Some 67% said they hoped for more disinfectants. The health ministry said 73 million surgical masks were sent to 40,000 medical facilities in March and April. Tashni Sukumaran in the South China Morning Post. As Malaysia battles the coronavirus, its Rohingya refugees face a torrent of hate. There have been a flurry of petitions calling for them to be deported, along with an uptick in anti-immigrant comments on social media. Some Malaysians are decrying the resources spent on the Rohingya community, which experts say exacerbates persecution and mistrust. Malaysia has a long history of being a destination or a midpoint for refugees, including Bosnian Muslims fleeing ethnic conflict in the 1990s. The Muslim majority nation is a popular destination for the Rohingya due to the perception it is friendly to other Muslims, as well as its peacefulness, relative wealth, and appetite for foreign labor. Many Rohingya refugees already have family in Malaysia. Joe Mackenzie McLean in stuff.co.nz. Expectant mother worried about using street side shower. An expectant mother is flummoxed and furious. She is expected to use an outside portable shower that barely works after she gives birth at a temporary maternity unit in Queenstown. Helen Hodges of Arrowtown is due to give birth on May 5th and has changed her birthing plan to deliver somewhere that has suitable washing facilities after she discovered she was expected to use an outside shower set up outside a community dental clinic. The clinic, opposite Lakes District Hospital, is being used as a temporary maternity birthing unit as part of the Southern District Health Board's COVID-19 response. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
I'm not a medical expert. These are the things we know. Keep 2 meters apart, what I have heard. Medical experts, these are the things we know to prevent you from speaking moistly.
That's from Justin Trudeau speaking moistly by Anonymotif on YouTube. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Oregonian, Shane Dixon Kavanaugh. Thousands of new coronavirus cases could spring up if Oregon moves too fast to reopen, new modeling suggests. The latest forecast by researchers at the Institute for Disease Modeling comes as state officials finalize plans to reopen parts of the economy and lift some shutdown orders. It estimates COVID-19 transmissions decreased 70% in Oregon after Governor Kate Brown issued her aggressive stay-at-home rules in late March, a rate that, if maintained, would cause the number of people infected with the virus to decline slowly over the next several weeks. But if the transmission rate increased by as little as 10% as restrictions eased, Oregon could see thousands of additional coronavirus infections during that time, the study's authors claim. According to the Institute's model, up to 9,200 Oregonians have currently contracted COVID-19, nearly four times the 2,500 known cases reported in the state as of Thursday. Jeff Baker in the Seattle Times, Seattle entrepreneur touting coronavirus vaccine caused uproar when San Juan Island mayor invited him to visit. Seattle entrepreneur Johnny Stein offered his COVID-19 solution on social media for $400 to buyers in Washington and beyond. One of those intrigued was the mayor of the San Juan Island town of Friday Harbor, Farhad Khatan. He caused a social media stir this month by inviting Stein to visit him during a restricted travel period and perhaps have him try the unauthorized vaccine. Khatan said he and Stein postponed the planned visit because of the uproar and that he has not tried the vaccine or helped to promote it. Washington Attorney General Bob Ferguson sent Stein a cease and desist letter for making false or unsupported claims. Kevin Tretch of Czech News. Quarantine axe-throwing league takes off in Victoria. The QATL, as it is known, launched just over a month ago, and now there are nearly 1,000 members on their Facebook page hailing from Canada to New Zealand. There are currently a handful of members from Vancouver Island. Anyone with a Facebook account, backyard, axe, and target board can join. The owner of Axe and Grind in Victoria and Nanaimo, which has closed due to COVID-19, has started building target boards to provide islanders with a chance to continue throwing and perhaps join the QATL. Many virtual axe-throwing matches take place on a daily basis. And these headlines this week in the Breaker.News. BC government ad department slow to switch messages from the political to the pandemic. In a virtual hearing, judge makes plans as verdict nears in Meng Wanzhou's first bid to thwart U.S. extradition. And when the personal intersects with the political, the public has the right to know. Will Surrey Mayor Doug McCallum fess up about his relationship with Councillor Alison Patton? Read the stories behind these headlines. Go to thebreaker.news. Wuhan Coronavirus Pandemic 2020. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.news podcast. There is no single item this week, but now that we are 4 months through 2020, how about four items from the last week of the fourth month? Item one. What is the status of Surrey Mayor Doug McCallum's relationship with Councillor Alison Patton? Patton won her seat in 2018 with McCallum's Safe Surrey Coalition slate, and the two have been seen leaving each other's residences. TheBreaker.news has unsuccessfully sought their comment. Bob Bowes was mayor of Surrey from 1988 until the 1996 civic election, when he lost to Doug McCallum 1.0. Bowes returned to politics on city council from 2000 to 2008. He is the grandson of Surrey pioneer and mayor from 1905 to 1910, Henry Bowes. In an interview with TheBreaker.news, Bowes said that McCallum 2.0 and Patton owe it to citizens to clear the air.
It's imperative that relationship, that they be very transparent about it. If they have a relationship, that's their business, but their conduct in office can't be judged properly without understanding what their relationships are. Are they acting independently in terms of discharge of their public responsibilities, or are their decisions compromised by relationship? You know, as Trudeau said, the state has no business in the bedrooms of the community, but you know, transparency is also imperative here.
And at the same time, they've been part of a council that has actually raised a bar. There's a new code of conduct for councillors, new ethical code of conduct, which includes clauses about conflict of interest and whether there may be a conflict of interest that there should be disclosed.
You know, everything from conflict of interest is at the core of this. And when there are personal relationships that take the scope and depth of what is being suggested exist, then there's a lot of occasions where they're not making free and independent decisions. Let's just talk about replacing Stephen Pettigrew from the Metro Vancouver board and replacement by Alison Patton. I mean, there was no justification that I'm aware of for removing Stephen Pettigrew, and the appointment of Alison Patton to replace him carries with it monetary considerations. The board members are paid significant per diems, or at least per meeting fees, and there's a considerable income generated by participation in the board activities and on committees of the regional district. So this is not without concern.
Item two. The Parliamentary Budget Officer in Ottawa is forecasting a $252.1 billion deficit in the current fiscal year because of the coronavirus economic crash. But that isn't stopping the Canadian Football League from making a Hail Mary plea for a bailout of as much as $150 million from taxpayers. The CFL, which has hired a lobbyist to make its case, says it can offer the federal government a platform to advertise government programs to Canadians. The Grey Cup is the biggest homegrown sporting event annually in Canada. It's part of Canadian culture. The Grey Cup champion Winnipeg Blue Bombers are publicly owned and reported $30.8 million in expenses in 2018. In Vancouver, the BC Lions remain owned by Hamilton Auto Parts billionaire David Braley, But with the region's demographic shift, attendance at BC Place Stadium has fallen. The club has also been hurt by the rise of the Seattle Seahawks and their popularity among BC sports fans. Prime Minister Trudeau was asked about the CFL's ask.
We are continuing to engage with various sectors, industries, and organizations who are facing disruptions because of COVID-19. The CFL has approached us about support. We know it's important to them. We know it's important to many Canadians, and those discussions are ongoing.
In BC, Premier John Horgan was also asked about his appetite to subsidize the CFL and other leagues.
I am a big sports fan, and it's not just my I love going to the games. I love watching them on television, but it's a tremendous economic stimulus as well. The impact of the Canucks in the playoffs for the beverage industry is significant. There's a whole host of indicators I could roll out showing that professional sports teams, it's not just the gate receipts about who shows up and who has a hot dog and a beer. And all of that. It's all the other economic spin-offs. So there's positive consequences of having activity. There's negative consequences of it stopping. We'll take a close look at everything that comes forward. I think people get jaded if they're not sports fans and they look at the salaries that many athletes get paid. I'll tell you that lacrosse players don't get paid that much. Hockey players do, and CFL players are somewhere in between. But they are workers. And they're affected by this adversely, and we need to talk about that. But I have not seen any formal proposals, Keith, come by my desk yet. I know there are discussions underway. Lisa Baer, the minister responsible for sport, is available to hear from people, and we'll look at that in the balance of all of the other issues that are on our plate. But you are right. There are other priorities that are certainly higher. But there is a negative economic consequence to not seeing our professional sports underway this summer.
Item 3. The wheels of justice turn slowly. As a reporter covering courts in British Columbia, the institution still seems stuck in the 20th century in so many ways. So here we are, almost 20% into the 21st century, and it took a crisis, the pandemic, to push the courts forward. The top judges of BC's three courts, provincial, supreme, and appeal, sat down for a LexisNexis Zoom webinar on April 29th to talk about the challenges and the opportunities. This is Melissa Gillespie, the top judge of the Provincial Court of British Columbia.
I, in pre-COVID periods, had a program called Have a Judge, Need a Judge, essentially where if you needed a judge to take some of the matters in certain locations. For example, if you had a judge in Surrey whose matters had gone down for that day, they were able to assist in other locations across the province by appearing by video and hearing video matters. For example, also hearing or presiding over case conferences in other locations as well. So we've certainly had that kind of assistance that we've contemplated and had in place for a number of years as well. We've been working over a number of years with Court Services Branch to improve video conferencing capability and attempting to ensure that we've got better units in place. Over the years, we also worked towards developing a system where we were transporting fewer people from correctional centers to courts for bail hearings. But of course, that work has now been accelerated greatly as we are no longer transporting anyone to courthouses for bail hearings. They're appearing at local detachments or at correctional centers. Court Services Online certainly has helped us view documents to be filed electronically and also viewed. And in addition to that, through this process, we've been accepting filings by email, and we have been working to increase that as well. We've also, because we service so many different people across the province, and many of those individuals are self-represented litigants, we recognize that even as we move towards greater technological advancements, in order to provide meaningful access to justice for people in British Columbia, there are many people in British Columbia who do not have access, for example, to internet on an ongoing basis. They don't have data plans in their phone that would permit them to appear virtually. So we need to be mindful of that as we move towards creating different and better opportunities for individuals. And we look to things, for example, as simple as maybe creating places, public places in the future where people can access private rooms for hearings, if that's possible, and greater internet accessibility publicly for people.
Item four. The environmental movement is up in arms because one of its own subjected it to intense scrutiny. Michael Moore executive produced the Jeff Gibbs-directed Planet of the Humans, which skewers the renewable energy movement. The hour and 40-minute documentary has been seen by more than 5 million on YouTube. It turns out that solar and wind power require more fossil fuels and minerals than environmentalists are willing to admit. And some of their icons, such as 350.org founder Bill McKibben, might just be more interested in that other kind of green. You know, money.
The sun is renewable, but the solar arrays are not.
Oh, come on. There's got to be something renewable. So, glass is renewable.
Glass is not renewable.
Iron's renewable. Aluminum, that's renewable. I recycle my pop can, soda cans. I know it's renewable.
Yeah, the problem with all of these materials is that it takes an incredible amount of energy to mine and process all of the materials that go into building something like this. You use more fossil fuels to do this than you're getting benefit from it. You would have been better off just burning the fossil fuels in the first place instead of playing pretend.
Yes, these giant solar and wind technology installations may last only a few decades, then tear it down and start all over again. If there's enough planet left. It was becoming clear that what we have been calling green, renewable energy and industrial civilization are one and the same. Desperate measures not to save the planet, but to save our way of life. Desperate measures, rather than face the reality, humans are experiencing the planet's limits all at once.
Lots of toilet paper, but rare trips to the loop. All was Gordon was just wrong. What nervous people do, seeing the world out my window, the right thing to do. Isolation's what I'm in, I got the COVID-19 blues. We should have thought ahead, first China, then Iran. This is my first pandemic, I'm doing all I can. I wash my hands with soap, water, sanitizer too. I douse myself in vodka just to spend some time with you.
The COVID-19 Blues by the Accutones. The voice of the Accutones is Richmond, BC lawyer Paul Doroshenko of Acumen Law. You can find his website, vancouvercriminallaw.com. The virtual Nanaimo Bar brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a person or group making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to British Columbia's public school teachers, who voted 98% in favor of accepting a new 3-year contract. They'll get 2% raises in each year, in keeping with the province's policy. The pact and the money are both surprises, as pundits feared the BCTF would want more and force a strike, but then the pandemic happened. It is retroactive to 2019, so the deal expires in 2022. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
I did a volunteer stint, soup kitchen this morning. The poorest amongst us are being hurt by people who are hoarding. Grocery stores, surgical masks, sanitizers. So let me just say to those who are trying to exploit others, there must be a special place in hell, a special place in hell, a special place in hell for people like that. There must be a special place in hell.
That's from The Battle of Alberta. Jason Kenney sings Special Place in Hell by Anonymotif on YouTube. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of May 3rd, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on May 3rd in 1867, the Hudson's Bay Company gave up its claim to Vancouver Island? When the colony of Vancouver Island was established in 1849, it was leased to the Hudson's Bay Company for 7 shillings a year. Today, the department store chain has 2 stores in Victoria and 1 in Nanaimo. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to Bob at thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Playing us out this week is Burnaby City Councillor Joe Keithley of DOA and Mayor Mike Hurley with We're All In This Together. It's a song to celebrate the community and the frontline workers during the coronavirus pandemic. Until next week.
A sound. You gotta help your neighbors all across this land. And the frontline workers who fight to keep us safe. They are brave souls. By their courage, I'm amazed. Together.